It's a wet, wet, wet Thursday in New York City. How are you, my friends? Mark Farrow coming to you live from the Upper West Side. Yeah, it's been raining here for the last 2 days. A little soggy. But New Yorkers are tough. Tri-state areas get a good washing. The Big Apple will shine a little bit better, a little bit brighter, after all this rain ceases. A lot of great topics to talk about today. We're going to be talking about Oscar Pistorius. Only got sentenced to 5 years. And out of that 5 years, he's going to have to probably serve a minimal amount of time for murdering his girlfriend in cold blood. So I have some ideas if you really want to take someone out in life. You're just going to have to relocate to South Africa, and we'll continue with those great ideas and strategies in the second part of the show. So you know what? I know I'm going to get a lot of emails about this, and I mean no harm, no disrespect. I'm a major supporter of breast cancer, drugs, technology, medicine. But I have to tell you, and maybe you feel a little bit like this, pink is so ubiquitous. I have to paint a little bit of a picture for you, a pink picture. Okay, in my hand, I hold from the downstairs great, great coffee place, Orens, I believe it's pronounced, O-R-E-N-S. I don't drink coffee, but I drink tea. There is a pink top on it. So this got me to thinking that, you know, I'm just surrounded, and you are probably too, by pink. I rode on a subway car today. This particular car was honoring the month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and the inside of it was painted, you got it, wrapped in pink. My son plays soccer, 5 years old, and we got a letter, an email, saying, could you please, you know, consider wearing pink socks for the month of October? So I thought that was a little bit premature for a five-year-old, so we opted out of the pink socks. And then, of course, you know, the newspaper at the end of my driveway was wrapped in what? Not a blue sleeve, a pink sleeve. It goes on and on. The people I work with, colleagues, the school that I went to and spoke at yesterday, there were pink lapels, buttons, flowers. It's just amazing. So there's two ways to think about this. Whoever, obviously, they're not the first one, obviously, to coin a signage and or assign a color to a particular month. But this is really taken off by gangbusters. Really well done to the marketers. The NFL donning pink. Of course, they should don whatever they need to do to resurrect and to improve their reputation. That's a whole nother conversation. But they've been doing that for years. I forgot about that, but one of my colleagues reminded me about that. So that's nothing new for them. But it just got me thinking, like, can we have like a moment of like pinklessness? Like when I brush my teeth, do I have to be reminded of Breast Cancer Awareness Month? There's going to be Colgate's going to come out with like a pink toothpaste for the month? That's actually a great idea. So maybe I'm not going to be able to brush my teeth and not be able to think of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Believe me, I'm not taking anything away from the validity of the message. It's just when you see something like carpeted and just painted everywhere. Of course, the Empire State Building has Knights of Pink, and that's pretty cool, things of that nature. Anyway, so that's my little pink update. I thought I'd share with you. If you're a Pink Floyd fan, you're waiting for the new release on November 9th of the much-anticipated release of The Endless River. Pretty cool. The reason why I bring this to your attention, number one, I am a devout Pink Floyd fan. Yeah, I'll say that correctly now. And it's kind of interesting because Stephen Hawking, you know, the physicist who has a voice-generated box, it sounds like a digitized synthesizer because it is a digitized synthesizer voice, he's going to be on one of the tracks. And I think that is so cool on many, many levels. First of all, for the disabled community. And secondly, it's not making fun, certainly by all means, of Stephen Hawking because he's been certainly one in the public eye for it, certainly the last decade plus, for his work, his contributions, and even his just advances for the disabled community in terms of being out there and not letting his limitations limit him or define him. That's so cool for Stephen Hawking. That's even cooler for Pink Floyd, you know, an iconic band, to include him in such a very, very cool endeavor. So really looking forward to hear that. I wasn't able to interview him when I was working for a magazine and a website and a radio show called We Media many years ago, back in 98. He was featured on the cover, Stephen Hawkins, and our schedules wouldn't work out. They were just not permitting us to get together. But he was interested in speaking with me, and I was interested in speaking with him, but we just couldn't get it together. So I missed that opportunity, but really, hopefully one day I'd be able to speak with Mr. Hawkins, because I think he's a brilliant man, and I'd love to hear his take and perspective on a lot of different things. And speaking of perspective, yesterday I had a great opportunity, as I do most weeks. As you know, I speak to schools and corporations across the nation about a lot of different compelling and vital topics. Yesterday's topic at a high school in New Jersey, in Colts Neck, New Jersey, an affluent town, a very large high school, was to the special ed population. And the person who hired me said to me that I have as much time as I want to. And I was like, well, at first I'm elated, because I love to be able to stand up in front of an audience, especially special ed crowds, and give as much information and as much experience that I've had so they can benefit from all that I've lived through, all the things I was able to do and was not able to do. So at the same time, like, if he said to me 90 minutes to 2 hours, you have that much of a window. That's a hell of a long time for an audience that is impaired. Now, we're talking about impaired individuals across the spectrum and classifications ranging, you know, fairly greatly. But certainly I'm going to embrace the idea, and which I did. So I would say I went about 75 minutes-ish, maybe a little bit longer. And I was so impressed with how attentive they were, the questions they asked, and how focused they were. You know, a few people here and there. I mean, in any audience, in any given audience, when someone's speaking for 75 minutes as an audience member, that's a long time to sit on your bum and to be drawn into whoever is speaking about whatever topic. So yesterday was overcoming adversity. I shared all my stories and examples of living with a visual disability. And this crowd, most crowds, love this prop I have. It's a dictionary. And I'll put this on the Insight page. So go to prn.fm and find the Insight page, and you'll be able to hear this podcast later today and see this picture. When I was a kid, I was issued a large print dictionary. Now, when you think of large print dictionary, you think of the books in Barnes & Noble that are the same physical size as all the other books, or maybe slightly bigger. But the print is probably like 16-point font, 18-point font, somewhere around there. Well, abolish that thought. This large print dictionary that I was given in sixth grade weighs 11 pounds. 11 pounds. That is a dumbbell. You know, an average dumbbell is like 10 pounds, you know, on a lighter side. And it's about, I'm using my hands to signify the size of it, but unless you're watching online, which you can, prn.fm, and click on watch now. See, we don't even make it difficult for you. You can see how I'm illustrating the size of this book. Actually, I'm not illustrating any anatomical size of mine. Anyway, so the book is about 2 feet tall, maybe about 30 inches tall by about 16 inches. So it's really big. So when I break this out and show audiences and say, what do you think this is? Obviously, they can tell it's a book. What do you think it was used for? To make me stronger, taller, smarter looking, because you were carrying a big book. So when I open up the book and show them exactly what it is and why the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired issued this to me, they're like, whoa, even an impaired audience gets it. Because one of the first things I start out asking them is what they love to do, and I get them on my side if they like the Facebook, text, Instagram, you name it. And they're raising their hands, they like pizza, food, and this is kind of, a younger audience and slightly impaired, so I keep things very palatable and very simple and easy to digest. And then I ask them at one point, who likes to be different? Raise your hand. And then out of about, 180 kids, I'd say maybe about 10 kept their hands raised. And I was surprised. That was pretty cool. So then I don't go into why they raised their hand right then, because it's too premature, because I need to get into that's within the first 2 minutes of my presentation. So we get into whole reasons why people are different, whether you have a disability or not. And one of the first things that break out is that prop of the large print dictionary. But the reason why I bring this story up is not about the dictionary. It's more about the question that I received from a teacher that I was so happy to field. It really made my day. And I think I'm going to incorporate it somehow into my, very easily, into my future presentations on particular audiences or with particular audiences. The question posed to me is, now, Mark, can you explain to all the individuals in this room, all the students, the 180-ish students, why they are in this room and the rest of the school is not? Wow, I'm thinking, what a great question. Immediately, I'm thinking, okay, I got to be very, very sensitive and handle this with kid gloves. But I knew the answer right away. And I knew it didn't take a lot of coddling to deliver this news. So I said, that's a great question, and here's the reason why. Everybody, as I said to the students in the room, everybody is different. They learn differently. They speak differently. They look differently. So if everybody was in the same class or same types of classes and was, for example, learning calculus. Now, if I had to go into that class today, calculus class today, I would fail. I would not do well. And I explained to the kids, certainly they know my education, how my visual impairment allowed me, prevented me from not seeing chalkboards and took me much longer to read textbooks, etc. So I said, when I was in school, the education and the curriculum was the same for me. So I was always behind. As much as I worked hard, I could still never really stay on top and or get ahead or excel. More importantly, excel. So now if you are in a class with everybody else, which I'm sure that would make you feel really good for a while, but everyone has certain strengths and everyone has weaknesses. So if you're in a class, a science class, biology class, economics class, English honors possibly, and you're not doing well, you can't get the attention you need, and then your test scores don't show how smart you are, then you're not going to be feeling too good about yourself. So the reason why you are in this room today is because this particular school system has created a program just for you guys to cater to your needs, your specific needs. So, therefore, you get the attention, the time, the caring, the TLC, and everything that you need. And I included a little bit more, but I'm kind of giving you the bullet points of what I said. And that's imperative. And I totally understand, I get it, why you would sit here in your chair, and actually some kids were in actual wheelchairs, or the auditorium seats, and question, why am I in this room when everyone else in the school is not? And then one of the things I repeat to them is my mantra. My difference makes me stronger. Just because they're in different classes doesn't make them any better than you. They're just different. They learn differently. And I had a few questions for some of the students. I said, I learn differently from you, you, and you. Just as the five of you learn differently from the five people next to them. So it was a great question. It was a great talk. I really enjoyed it. But that was a question that I think a lot of people think, if you could read the bubbles over people's head, certainly by the administrators and certainly from a lot of the students, the higher functioning kids, they ask that or would want to ask that. And I'm so happy and embrace that. And I will incorporate that because that's very important for kids to understand who are, you know, in different special education programs. So I tip my hat off to the Colts Neck school system and the Monmouth County Regional High School District for doing a great job, and to Doug Dalbert and to the principal and vice principal there. So, you ready to laugh? So am I. I've been very happy to have met an individual many years ago. God, he's been a pain in the ass for years, but I love the guy. He's visually impaired, and he's one heck of a guy. He's the president and founder of Laugh for Sight. And he's one driven individual. And this coming Monday is a 9th annual event that he has put together. He's bi-coastal. He's many things. He puts his event on in New York City and also L.A. And I'm happy to welcome to the show on PRN.FM, Brian Fisher. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm good, Mark, but, you know, it's things have changed over time. I'm no longer visually impaired. I'm now a blind mofo. So, you know, I'm completely blind. I just go with the whole blindness tag now. And you know, it was funny. I was listening to your last segment there about that, you know, that old dictionary, large print dictionary, and it reminded me of my parents because they, you know, they moved from the house that I grew up in to a new house, and of course, the first thing they wanted to throw away was all my baseball cards from when I was a kid.
No, don't do it!
Exactly, exactly. I can't see them anymore, but still,
you can feel them and smell them.
Well, yeah, you know, and I'm hoping one day they'll cure me, and then I'll be like, oh, hey, remember these old Dave Winfield cards? But they might be worth something.
Absolutely.
So I'm asking them, well, why don't you have room? And my mom starts to explain to me what's in the room, and I'm like, wait a minute, go back a minute. She's talking about the encyclopedias. I said, the ones from when I was a kid?
Britannica.
Yes. From 1980. I said, what was the published date of those encyclopedias? She opens them up, 1983. I said, why in the world would you keep those? She said, well, sometimes you just want to look things up. I said, because Google is so slow.
And so dusty and so out of the way.
I asked her, I said, do me a favor. Go over to those encyclopedias, look up the word internet. Well, guess what? It didn't exist.
Absolutely. Well put. Well put. And that's the reason why you're a comedian. Brian, welcome to the show, man.
Happy to be here.
And I think you're full of shit about losing your eyes, your vision completely, because I think it just gives you great material.
It does. It does. You know, it's an easy way, you know, to tell you the truth. I'm really not blind. I just really don't like looking at pictures of my friends' kids and their family vacations. And
yeah,
stuff.
No
and,
kidding. Or what they're going to have to eat that night.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares?
You know, and, yeah, the great thing about being blind is, you know, come Thanksgiving, which we got coming up in a few months, and this is a little piece of advice I could offer some of your listeners. You could look like the nicest guy in the world because you're normally in the dining room. You got the fine china out. You just stand up with one of those plates and say, "Where can I take?" Oh no! You just sit there and. You know,
that's you great. You look like the most helpful.
Exactly. You know, so you got to just because you have a disability doesn't mean there are certain tricks you need to learn. You know, there are certain things you could do. And, you know, you offer to help clean up. And before you know it, you're sitting back in front of the TV listening or watching football. So you got to learn to play the cards you've been dealt, I guess, is the moral of the story.
Well, and speaking of morals of stories and events, 9 years ago, you had an idea to carve out a platform for people with vision loss and blindness. And this is when, at a time, you had much better vision. How did you decide to create such an event?
Yeah, I had been starting out. I had started out in stand-up comedy a year earlier. And I said, you know, there's got to be something I could do to give back. And you know, at the time, we were involved with I was involved with volunteering with some vision organizations, and I had seen that they weren't really doing anything, you know, any big event-wise. So I just kind of had this idea, what about if we got, you know, some big comics, some well-known nationally touring comics, got them together, got them to donate their time and raise money for retinal degenerative eye disease research at the same time. And yeah, the phrase was easy. We're like, well, what do we call this? And we just, boom, Laugh for Sight just popped into my head.
And, nice and simple.
Yeah, you know, and you know, don't get me wrong, there's been plenty of growing pains, but, you know, we're 9 years into it. We've had over 60 comedians donate their time. You know, last year we had Jerry Seinfeld. We've had Sarah Silverman, Colin Quinn, Robert Klein. I mean, the list just goes on and on.
Stephen Wright.
Yeah, John Oliver. You know, we had him when he was just a small-time correspondent with The Daily Show, and now look at him now. So we helped him launch into the stratosphere with his own show on HBO.
You know, it's funny on a sidebar here. At first, I didn't like him at all. I just couldn't hang out for more than a minute or two. Mm-hmm. Now I'm addicted to the guy.
You know, the thing about John that I love, and you know, running this benefit, I've I've gotten to know a lot of these comedians personally and develop relationships with them over the
years. And they're all pretty effed up, right?
Yeah, you know, you get a bunch of comedians in a room.
It's scary.
And, you know, you're going to have a horrible time.
It's you not feel like you're an AA.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people often ask me, how do I know when I'll be a successful comedian? And I say, well, when I'm in AA, because all the successful ones I know are in recovery. So
it's hysterical. But, it's so true.
Yeah, you know, but no, John, he's a great, the great thing about John is he's a better person than he is even a comedian. And so it's great when you see somebody like that that's just a down-to-earth guy, and he's having all the success in the world. And, you know, we're hopeful that we'll have him again at Laugh for Sight in the future.
Now, is it difficult for you because you've changed the benefactors once or twice or three times possibly throughout the nine-year success of Laugh for Sight, where to donate the critical funds that you're raising?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's been there have been issues over the years. You know, we're not going to single anybody out here
single me out. That's all you can do. I'm fair game.
So, yeah, there was this Mark Farrell, and he was an unbelievable pain in the ass to deal with. You know, we just asked him to show up and present him with a check, and that wasn't good enough for him now. So, yeah,
You know, that's not the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. There's just... It's amazing the politics, you know, you wouldn't believe, you know, a lot of people, it's funny because, you know, and I guess it's this way in life in general, people want to offer you, well, why aren't you doing it this way or why aren't you doing this? And, you know, you really need, one of my favorites is why are you not releasing a DVD of the show to maximize sales? Because it's impossible. You have to have every comedian sign off on it and they're not going to do it because... Then you're cutting into their own living.
Their product, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't get that. You know, they should be, they're generous in donating their time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when was the last time you donated your skills or, I'm not talking about you, I'm just talking about people in general. And, you know, people don't get that, you know, and it's great that they want to offer their 2 cents, but a lot of people don't understand how difficult it is to pull this benefit off each and every year. And you know, there's always complications. And you know, I like to think that we do a pretty good job of keeping it behind the scenes. You know, we've gotten to the point where there hasn't been anything major in a few years. But, you know, there were definitely
some. Well, what about the time you had some dog fights on the stage? Because a few of the dog guide dogs were just, you know, didn't take to each other.
Well, that was part of the entertainment. You know, that was the year we had Michael Vick there performing.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I didn't realize that was staged.
Yes, yeah. You must have missed the back where people were placing bets and everything.
I totally missed that. See, one visually impaired guy to another, that really went over my head.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing sometimes. You know, we get a lot of blind people showing up. We do get some deaf people showing up. And, you know, I guess when you have a disability, you're going to miss out on things. So you missed out on the gambling at that event.
Totally did.
Well, the dog fight.
Absolutely. Well, the nice thing about this is that I've been a part of this for 9 years, which I failed to mention at the head of the interview. But also is that I feel very, very comfortable, more comfortable than anywhere I speak to really make fun of myself. I mean, I'm very, very open about my life and what I can and can't do, but I even feel more comfortable roasting myself in the goodness of like trying to get people to take part in a silent auction and win a Derek Jeter package, which you'll tell them about, or a special Top of the Rock or Rainbow Room tickets or anything of that nature. But it's just a terrific platform to just let everything go out there, man. Throw those jokes about myself, be self-deprecating out there, and people love it.
It is, you know, I have noticed that Laugh for Sight is a very self-deprecating environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because we realize there are people in the crowd that are going through similar things that we are, so we think they're going to, you know, they're going to relate to us more than maybe just a audience that you might speak in front of where you don't really know anybody. And, you know, on the flip side, you know, that's hard because you're like, okay, how personal do I want to get when there's people in the crowd that I know? You know, there's certain material I haven't done in certain years because either my parents or sister or relatives are in the crowd. I'm like, yeah, I really don't want to talk about that. Well,
I think it's
there.
Good therapy, man. Just throw it out there.
Yeah.
then they'll have to go into therapy.
Well, what would be funny is after I do that, then I won't get an invitation to Thanksgiving.
Yes, exactly. And you really don't have to wash any dishes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny also. Because I've had comedians come off stage at Laugh for Sight, and they're like, "Oh my god!" Like it hits them after the fact. They're like, "I was just doing blind jokes," and I'm like, "Don't worry, it's okay. This is, you know."
Oh, it's so warranted.
We get an audience, you know, people that come to Laugh for Sight that are blind or visually impaired seem to be the kinds of people that have very good sense of humors about it. They want to laugh about it. You know, don't get me wrong. We all have our moments where, you know, we're pissed off at the world for our situation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're at an event from Laugh for Sight, you're there to have a good time, share some laughs, and, you know, the comedians, we don't censor them in any way. You know, that was one year we had another organization we were involved with, and the first thing they said to me was, they're like, we need to control what the comedians say. I said, are you out of your mind? I said, no, that's not going to happen. Well, what if they offend a sponsor? I go, then they offend a sponsor. I go, the minute you tell a comedian that they can't talk or about a certain topic, I go, that's going to be the first thing out of their mouth.
That's as likely as happening as the CIA is going to stop people from jumping over the White House fence and getting in.
Or the NSA is going to stop listening to our phone calls. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think another great success to all these great personal jokes is the open bar.
It is. You know, at the silent auction, we do have the open bar, and that, you know, really between that and you, who, you know, you do a fantastic job every year, you know, hosting the silent auction portion of the evening and everything, and, you know, really getting the bids up there and promoting, you know, the items that we have for sale, and we're very thankful to your involvement over the past 9 years, and, you know, so it's an exciting time, you know.
Thank you very much, but I really don't think it's my personality. I think it's the special sex toys that we target towards blind population.
Well, you know, you are dealing with a small industry.
Small industry?
Yeah, well, hey, pardon the pun, you know. And, you know, you have a certain select product line that, you know, is only of interest to the blind. And, you know, people ask, what's this, you know, and that's a sighted person. You're like, I can't tell you. And then a blind person sees it, and they know exactly that fold-up cane has multiple purposes, you know.
Whoa, ba-da-bap. So a lot of the information we're talking about is on laughforsight.com. That's forsight.com. But do me a favor, because the words Derek Jeter are, you know, they're worth a big commodity, a high price nowadays. So tell everybody what one of the packages to look forward to this coming night at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City.
Yeah, you know, we're very excited to have partnered last year for the first time with an auction company that brings some, you know, really unique high-ticket items to the event. And this year, one of them is, and that kind of shocked me when they told me about it, because, you know, Jeter is such a secretive guy that I was like, really? You know, he's going to do a meet-and-greet? So we are auctioning off a meet-and-greet with Derek Jeter. Now, it's from my understanding, it's not just you and Derek hanging out going to the Starbucks. You know, it's probably like 40 or 50 people. But still, you know, that's a unique opportunity to tell them, you know, how much you love them or hate them, or I'm sure most people will tell them how much they love them. I am a, you know, huge Jeter fan, but unfortunately, I don't think I come from the financial background that would be able to afford an item like this and everything. So,
you just got to mess with a few zeros and a few decimal points, my friend. You run the organization.
That's true, you know.
But, hey, Brian, I got to ask you a question here. You're saying meet and greet, but I don't know whether it's my visual impairment getting in the way here or it's a typo, because it says M-E-E-T and greet.
M-E-E-T?
Yeah, as in meet. But I thought it was supposed to be M-E-A-T.
As in you get to eat some meat and then greet them?
Well, I you know, I don't know. I know how your mind works. You're a comedian. It's Derek Jeter, because I know the women dig him. So I'm not sure which way this meet and greet actually goes.
No, you know, there's, you know, unfortunately, the people, it's not the M-E-A-T and greet, you know. So
thank you for clarifying.
The women that are looking to go and get that rumored Derek Jeter goodbye package after he dates someone.
Well put.
You know, that those are not going to be available, you know. So it's just meeting him from the waist up, from what I understand.
But, hey, you know what? He may take a fancy to you, the PRN.FM listener.
You never know. You know, well, it's not like A-Rod, who, you know, what was it, like 3 years ago was, like, dating in the playoffs when he was on the on-deck circle and picking out women that he wanted to be with after the game. I don't think it'll be like that, you know, instead of focusing on getting an actual base hit. So, yeah, we were going to have a meet-and-greet with A-Rod, but we didn't want to cost the foundation money, you know.
Absolutely. The insurance rider would be more money than you could possibly raise in one sitting.
Yeah. So, you know, we're hoping that we get a lot of people coming out. It's this Monday. at Gotham Comedy Club on 208 West 23rd Street. And, you know, it's being hosted by Craig Carton, and you know, we have legendary comedian Robert Klein returning for his eighth year, along with Eddie Brill, Gilbert Gottfried, Jim Norton, Colin Quinn, Stacey Pressman, and, of course, Nash and me.
Nash, you should introduce our audience to Nash.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame they can't see him, but, you know, who knows? Maybe our audience is blind, so then that wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
But we'll have to get you a photo over there. So, Nash is the good-looking one in the comedy team. He's my guide dog. You know, we've been together now, 5 years, and, you know, he yawns when I'm on stage because he's heard all the material before, you know, and he's always busting my balls about me getting some new material.
Well put. Hey, if you had to sum it up in all the 9 years you've been doing this great, phenomenal Laugh for Sight event, who's your favorite comic?
My favorite comic, well, you know, it's interesting because we only had him the first year, and it's just, you know, timing and schedule-wise, we haven't been able to get him back, would be Nick DiPaolo.
Really? Why is that?
Yeah. You know, Nick, he's like a blue-collar guy, and that's kind of what
regular.
I'm like.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's very anti-political correctness, and I love that. And, you know, it's just he just tells it how it is, and I just think Nick is – I don't understand why his profile hasn't gotten larger. Maybe it is because he's anti-PC and he doesn't mess around, but I am just a huge, huge Nick DiPaolo fan. And I've been fortunate because throughout my career I've gotten to perform with Nick a couple times outside of Laugh for Sight. I just think the guy is – I was always a big Dennis Leary fan 25 years ago before I got into comedy, and I think Nick kind of comes from that same same school of comedy where
– Agreed.
Not afraid to offend most of the people in the room. You know, I actually saw Nick last January, I think at Boomer and Carton. They do a big comedy jam right the week of the Super Bowl. And I think he offended everybody in the room.
Fantastic. That's his job.
What about yourself? Who's your favorite comic?
I would say, well, you know what? When I met Stephen Wright, was it 2 years ago? I kind of grew up listening to him.
I want to say that was 3 years ago.
3 years ago. I was in awe meeting him. He seemed very different, but I just love his deadpan delivery. I thought he was very original in his concepts back then. And, I mean, Jerry Seinfeld last year was great. I always appreciate Robert Klein because he's the intellects comic, that's for sure.
Yeah, but, I love Robert. You know, he's like Uncle Bobby to me. And, you know, for Steven was, you know, the reason when he did it, he told me, pulled me off to the side, and I think this is great when a comic tells me this. And he feels that, he felt that research for vision diseases is probably one of the most important fields of research, and that it gets so ignored. And I thought that was just really cool to hear, you know, from somebody like a Stephen Wright and everything. And that was very special.
Yeah, man.
He doesn't perform that much anymore, and yeah, he lives in Boston, so we just got lucky that that year he just happened to be, you know, spending time in New York and everything. Because that's one of the things people don't realize. People will tell me a lot, well, why don't you get so and so to perform? Well, we're dealing with local talent, you know.
Yeah.
It's not beneficial to us to be flying people in, because then you're just cutting into your overhead and everything. So it really depends on who's in New York or Los Angeles at the times. And, you know, it's another reason why we haven't expanded to other markets, because we did that 1 year down in South Beach, and it was just an absolute nightmare dealing with the logistics of flying the comedians in and cars and food, and you know,
then you're dealing with bikini waxing and all that. Even Robert Klein wanted to get waxed.
You know,
I mean, that adds up.
Comedians sending their suit out to be dry cleaned and then flitting you with the bill.
Yeah, I mean, it adds up. Now we're going to move to a little bit of a serious note here, because you're a well-established writer.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people with disabilities, but we're going to focus on people right now who are blind or visually impaired. What would you say to people who have great sight, to employers, to people in the research field, that just because you have a different way of getting things accomplished doesn't mean or lessen your abilities?
Yeah, first off, I really appreciate you addressing this, because this is a hot button topic to me outside of Laugh for a second. But people don't realize that, you know, just because you're a comedian that you can't be serious. And to give a little background, when I went off to guide dog school 5 years ago, I had never had a dog in my life. I didn't know what to expect. You know, it was a major lifestyle change. And to pass the time while I was there, I just started writing a blog about my daily adventures of being at guide dog school, and I had no idea anybody was reading it. And so when I started getting comments, I was like, well, this is kind of cool. And I saw a job posting on the internet on one of those blog sites, which was for Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, where they were looking to hire writers to write for his website. And I applied, and you know, I mean, you know, you've got certain parts of the population that love and worship Caesar, and you've got, you know, fair amounts of people that don't like him and are against his principles. But the one thing I have to say about the guy and his company, he gave me a chance. It wasn't that I was blind. He gave me a chance to write for him, and it's been 3 years now that I've been writing for him, and I'm just so thankful. When you have a disability, you know, you almost appreciate the opportunity when an employer gives it to you more than somebody that doesn't have a disability. There are so few employers out there that take risks on people with disabilities, and it's a really a sad state of our culture. I don't know if these numbers are accurate, but I think I read 78% of the blind population is living at the poverty level, and a lot of that has to do with the fact they can't get jobs. People, Fortune 500 companies are not taking risks on them. I recently threw my hat into the ring because, you know, even though I write for Caesar, you know, it's freelance. So it's not, you know, paying a lot of the bills, and I need something more substantial, and I write
for another. Sure, you're not buying any gold bling for Nash.
Exactly. I'm not bidding on a meet and greet with Derek Jeter from my paychecks with Caesar and the other websites that I write for. And I knew an employer that I knew quite well, who I won't mention, and I saw they had an opening that I thought I would be good for. And I sent in, you know, a letter to them stating, hey, you know, this is something, you know my skills, but let's just say they didn't even have the courtesy to get back to me, and it really spoke volumes. I mean, I even gave them an out, you know, in the email, because there was a chance that the job would be something that people felt a visually impaired person could not do. And I said, look, if you think this is something I can't do, I think we have the relationship where I completely understand if you're hesitant, you know, but I think, you know my skill set and my network and that sort of thing. And I was really surprised that they didn't even have the courtesy to get back to me. And this
wow.
is somebody that I know very, very well for a very long time. And, that really bummed me out, because it kind of hit me with the realization, if I can't get an employer that I've known for a long time to get back to me about a job. And, you know, I've gone through, you know, I come from working, you know, before I went blind to, you know, I was working on Wall Street. So, you know, I used to make a lot more money, and, you know, I was an executive headhunter. And, you know, when you're working in an atmosphere like Wall Street, everything is about speed and results. And obviously, when you're blind or maybe in a wheelchair or have other disabilities, odds are you can't work at the speed of somebody without disabilities. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to be 100% dedicated, putting
longer
absolutely.
Hours. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a shame that, you know, the general public, for the most part, in corporate America, just does not get it. And, you know, it's you're fighting an uphill battle. And, you know, so it is very difficult, which is why I am so grateful to somebody like Cesar Millan for allowing me and giving me the opportunity, you know, to write for them. And you know, I write some stories about guide dogs, but I'm also interviewing a lot of celebrities about dogs in their lives and the rescue work they're doing. And, you know, it's interesting, because I always like to start off an interview telling people that, hey, I just want to let you know I'm blind, because you're probably going to hear some voiceover stuff here going on in the background. I just want you know I'm not having a conversation. I am paying attention. And people are always, I guess the general public, and this might be the way employers are, they're not aware that the technology has gotten so much better over the last 5 years for people with disabilities. And I'm a big believer in technology.
Huge. Yeah.
Huge. I mean, I couldn't believe that we just celebrated it's only been 5 years, the 5-year anniversary of VoiceOver. And don't get me wrong, it's not perfect, but compared to what things were 5 years ago and the enhancements and improvements they're
and
constantly
compared to
making.
What your documents looked like 5 years ago.
Oh, God,
Brian Fisher's documents, it looked like your dog wrote them.
Yeah, you know, it looked like he wrote them and then chewed them and then
Paul, did his backspace,
business on them and everything.
Double return.
Blind people, I mean, technology's gotten so good, blind people can't use the excuse, my guide dog ate my homework. Anymore,
exactly.
You know, so, you know, and it's anybody with a disability, you know, everybody's different, but I'm always talking to people with disabilities, and you might be doing the same, how they really need to, I know it's frightening, but they really do need to embrace the technology that's out there. I mean, I'm constantly reading about, you know, stuff with, you know, universal design as well as assistive technology.
Oh, and, sure. It's out there. Big time.
Plethora. Yeah. You know, I've given into the Apple ecosystem, but, you know, I mean, from what I understand, Droid and PCs.
Oh, yeah. Catching up big time, man.
Oh, yeah.
Catching up big time.
Yeah.
And also, you know, on that note, there are so many people spending hours and hours, 10, 12, 14 hours in their chair typing, that they have such severe carpal tunnel that actually you switch to voice-activated software. I'm talking about people who are not visually impaired just to give their hands a break. So there are many upsides for technology to be applied in the workplace. And many people, I'd say the majority of the public, thinks that about the person on the corner with their cat, who is blind or in a chair, looking for handouts for free. Okay,
yeah.
Then there's a very small percentage of the people who realize that the person that they work with, their colleague or someone in their corporation that they read about in the monthly or bi-monthly newsletter is such a stellar employee. Any employer will tell you that disabled employees have such a value track record, absenteeism, excel in terms of what they actually do, their performance, hands down, more so than the able-bodied individual.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've read sociological reports and stuff about where I think a lot of that has to do with they realize the opportunity that they have. Where
sure,
Joe
as you
Schmo,
said, yeah.
Where the Brad Pitt-looking guy is you know,
taking a two-hour lunch.
Yeah, he's taking a two-hour lunch and the first one to get out of there and everything. And, you know, and a lot of people don't realize, you know, that disabled employee, they could be taking a two-hour trip just to get to work.
And, one way, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, and it's that they realize that, you know, if this opportunity goes away, and it's a shame that it's this, that they do realize that if this opportunity goes away, they don't know when or where that next opportunity might be coming. And, you know, it really is a status of our society. And, you know, I really credit Twitter because at first I didn't understand Twitter. And then finally one day it just occurred to me the point of Twitter.
Then Nash explained it to you?
Yeah, Nash explained it to me.
You're a guide dog.
After he unhooked me from the internet. That's
very good,
story.
Very good.
But, I mean, it just I've connected with blind people from Sweden to England
it's
to
incredible.
Australia. And some of these people are doing the most advanced things. I mean, I was involved with beta tests for a blind GPS app known as Blind Square.
Love it.
You know, it's really remarkable when you find out what people are doing. And, you know, I used to get very depressed because I'd go here in New York to the Lighthouse when they'd have a technology seminar. And I'd walk in there, and I was familiar with all the technology. I was by means any kind of technology expert, but I need to find out what's new and what's coming out. And through Twitter and the internet, I've been able to connect with people all over the world doing such amazing things as far as accessible tech. And you know, it's remarkable that accessible technology, accessibility, it's borderline on becoming a mainstream word. 5 years ago when you said accessibility, people had no clue what you were talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, look at all the new phones that are coming out with the standard size font of like 14.
Yeah.
And the screens that, you know, the beginning of the iPhones that were small, the average ones are, you know, 4 or 5 inches now, which is great.
Yeah.
Because
obviously
the baby boomers have a lot of discretionary income to spend. They're going to be older. They're getting older. So let's cater to them. And obviously the high percentage of vision loss when you do get to a certain age. So, Brian, let's end this serious shit right here. Let's get back to some funny stuff here. And also, we got to let you go because I know you have a lot of plans. And we have some horrific things to talk about in terms of the Saraville High School epidemic, which is crazy. But before I go there, I need to say, If you just tuned into Insight and heard Brian talking about Cesar, he's not his gay boyfriend. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
You're committed to Nash, not your gay dog guide dog either. It's just your guide dog.
When the dog's gay, it doesn't really matter. You know, there's not
true.
As much of a stigmatism in the dog world for dogs that.
I mean, a hump is
ways.
A hump.
Yeah, you know, it's like they don't make as big of a deal about it as
no,
say,
they
NFL,
don't.
As an
they're
NFL
not stigmatized. You're right. You're
yeah.
right. No, you can't pee on his fire hydrant. No gay dogs allowed.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian, give me the 411. Of course, it's this coming Monday night at the Gotham Comedy Club in New York City.
Yeah, you know, Laugh for Sight, our ninth year. Go to GothamComedyClub.com. There's a banner right there on the front page. Or you could go to LaughForSight.com. That's site, S-I-G-H-T, not website, site.com. So it's LaughForSight.com. You can click there on the ticket link. Or you can call 212-367-9000 because we do know people with disabilities sometimes don't use computers, which they need to start doing. But you can call that phone number to reserve your tickets to Laugh for Sight. Come on out for a great cause. Chance to bid on a meet and greet with Derek Jeter, Top of the Rock, many, many other great items. And then you're going to get to laugh your ass off with some of the biggest comedians in the world.
Absolutely. And that number again is 212-367-9000. 367-9000. Brian Fisher, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. It's been
a
lot of fun.
I take my hat off to you for doing a stand-up job. I mean, it's easy to have lost vision and just obviously you have to worry about yourself and generating income and to be able to be solvent in life. But you're doing way more than that. You're giving opportunity to others who may not be able to do so.
We like to think, you know, we're not raising $1 million here, but, you know, every little bit helps. And, you know, gene therapy research is at an exciting time between that and technology. You know, hopefully 5 years from now, your show is, you know, out of business because we've cured so many of these diseases. Unfortunately, that probably won't be the case. But, hey, if we cure a couple of them, that's a step in the right direction.
And worst case scenario, it's a good reason to go out and laugh your ass off.
That's true.
Brian, see you Monday.
Take care. See you then.
This is Insight on PRN.FM. We'll be right back in a moment. We're going to be talking about the Sayreville High School debacle. Hey, it's Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on PRN.FM. Thank you so much for joining me today and every Thursday. Greatly appreciate it. So if you've been following the whirlwind story of Oscar Pistorius, you know, he murdered his girlfriend a year and a half ago. Tragically, it's been really kind of like a TV drama court the whole way it's played out. But he got 5-year sentence yesterday as punishment for the culpable homicide conviction. So basically, South African law makes it pretty clear that Pistorius will be eligible to have his sentence lessened to a corrective, get this, a corrective supervision, basically, a.k.a. house arrest, after 10 months. Do you believe that? After a cold-blood murder. His defense counsel has indicated it expects that it'll happen at the earliest opportunity, but not it's not automatic, so I guess they have to apply for it. Now, the mother of, I just forgot her last name, sorry, my respect for her apologies, is actually happy with the verdict. But I guess if you grew up in that culture, you wouldn't expect more than that. So the International Paralympic Committee has already said it will ban Pistorius from competitions for 5 years. Well, that's good because he should be in jail for that time, but even if he's in house arrest. If he does so, the Olympic Committee, remember, he actually competed as a Paralympian with able-bodied individuals, should surely have to do the same. So now, if you do the math, that time frame moves kind of along with when he was planning to retire. So maybe two things will come about that would be really a good thing. That number one, he'll realize what a bad and cold-blooded murderer he is and have to stay in jail for 5 consecutive years and not in a home arrest situation. And secondly, he won't be able to do what he loves to do the most, is compete. And be known as the basically the fastest man or the Blade Runner. But anyway, so we're moving quite along here. We had such a great conversation with Brian Fisher, president and founder of Laugh for Sight, that we couldn't get to a lot more things today. Greatly appreciate you hanging in there. But I do want to touch on the update of the Sayreville sexual harassment for the freshman high schoolers on the football team there. It's taken a few turns since we've last spoken. The coaches were suspended, and some of the town members Family members are up in arms that they were suspended. But here's the scenario. Number one, there's two scenarios here. Number one, they did know about it and didn't do a darn thing. And number two, if they didn't know about it, then they're just as culpable because it's their watch. It happened on their watch. You are responsible for minors. You are responsible for everything that goes on the field, in the locker room, on the bus, when they're under your time of the day or practice or game time, whatever. So I believe they should be fired. They should clean house and start all over again. Now, my second take on this is also that I believe one of the coaches was arrested 3 weeks ago in North Jersey, pulled over for, I think, a violation, and they found testosterone in his car with 14 needles, hypodermic needles. So he was arrested with intent to distribute, et cetera, et cetera. Or was he really? Because after this arrest occurred, that's when the whole event kind of blew up a few days later when one of the mothers of the victims went to the press. So I think there's maybe two things that happened. I think that one of the coaches actually sung and said, well, you know what? I don't want this on my record. I don't want it to follow me, etc. I will quit my position at Saraville War Memorial High School, but I'll tell you what's going down there. So that's my take on it. But unfortunately, a few of the victims are changing their stories a bit. And I don't think it's because it's the truth. I think they're getting a lot of pressure from the town. The town of 44,000 people who are obsessed with football. We're going to talk more about this, and I'm sure more events will unravel by next Thursday. If you want to hear this show, the entire show, or any former Insight show, go on to prn.fm, check out Insight. I'll be back next week with some more compelling interviews. We have some great things in work, some celebrity guests and more. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great and dry day wherever you are. Enjoy.